This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan and Lee Chui Lin. Tonight, we're breaking down the newly announced cabinet, looking specifically at what it will mean for governance and health.
First, Tricia Yeo joins us to talk about what we can expect from this high-performance cabinet, to quote the Prime Minister. And then Khairi Jamaluddin has been appointed Health Minister. We want to find out how this will affect our policies moving forward.
So, what do you think of this new cabinet? Call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:08, and of course, this morning, Prime Minister Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri announced his cabinet lineup, who are scheduled to be sworn in next Monday. And he did say that the main goal of this cabinet is to tackle COVID-19 as well as to heal the economy. And to reiterate that phrase that you mentioned earlier, he highlighted that this will be a high-performance cabinet, so every minister will need to prove their performance within the first 100 days in office.
Now, on that note, I can't say it enough, this idea of high performance, because it is something that everybody wants to see. And yet, it's going to require an actual change in culture, I would think, because there has not been a change in lineup, or at least there have been no significant changes in lineup. So if you have the same people, in some cases in different positions, in others just occupying the same portfolio, and you are now saying that this is going to be a different cabinet, this is going to be, you know, a cabinet that focuses on performance, the question really is how that is going to be. So 100 days is a good time frame, but I guess we need to wait on more announcements as to what exactly that's going to entail. And just to reiterate that point about familiar faces, so we once more have no Deputy Prime Minister, instead four senior ministers, all of whom were there in the previous cabinet as well. So it's Azmin Ali, Muhammad Radzi Jidin, Hishamuddin Hussein and Fadila Yusof. And we've also seen some returning faces in new positions. So Khairi Jamaluddin, the major headline, I think, is swapping portfolios with Dr. Adam Baba. So he is now Health Minister. Dr. Adam Baba is Science, Technology and Innovation Minister. We have Tan Sri Anwar Musa, former Federal Territories Minister, now Communications and Multimedia. Datuk Suraida Kamarudin, formerly Housing and Local Government, now Plantations and Commodities. And Datuk Sri Taqiyuddin Hassan, formerly de facto Law Minister, now Energy and Natural Resources Minister.
Some new additions. So Federal Territories Minister is now Datuk Sri Shahidan Kasim. And Youth and Sports is Datuk Sri Ahmad Faizal Azumu. Just to point out, the portfolio that he holds, he's 51 years old, and his deputy, Thilian Kerr, is 58. Just a little trivia there. And I think one of the things that has got a lot of attention is the fact that outgoing Dewan Rakyat Speaker, Datuk Sri Azalina Uthman, was not included in the cabinet.
And a lot of people had expected, right? Because that's what they thought the outgoing might have indicated. I want to return to youth and sports simply because in the week leading up to this announcement, whenever it is that we talked about ideal situations, whenever we asked what it is that you would like to see, one of the things that came up a lot was better youth representation, just a reflection that the times they are changing and the cabinet is changing with them. And so I think it's disappointing overall to see that there isn't a lot of youth representation, but that particularly for the portfolio of youth and sports, we have people who are older holding that post, because I think that a lot of the concerns that people are facing because of the pandemic, whether it's worries about employment, whether it's education, all these things directly impact our youth. And so I'm not saying that you have to be young in order to understand, but it would have been encouraging to see, I suppose, a younger face, somebody who's closer to the ground in that sense to handle these sorts of issues. Having said that, these are not the only criticisms that have been levied at this particular cabinet, as you would expect.
Yes, and a lot of them are actually in line with, or similar to what you said, right? A sort of match or mismatch between things that people have championed or stood for, but have not necessarily panned out in this lineup. So Hannah Yeo, for instance, tweeted about why Azalina Uthman was excluded and called it a missed opportunity for better representation for children in the cabinet. And I think this is, you know, it's not a huge leap to say that meanwhile, the current Women and Family Development Minister, Rina Harun, hadn't exactly been the most popular and had been criticized for a number of things that had happened over the course of her past tenure. Hannah, you also questioned why the Federal Territories Minister was not a minister from KL. The current minister, Shahidan, is from Perlis. The previous minister, Anwar Musa, is from Kelantan. I think there are a lot of questions being brought up in terms of this, in terms of why people were picked for particular portfolios instead of others who could potentially have held it better.
Yes, and that's basically it, right? This question of perhaps it was made worse by the fact that we had the time to talk about who everybody thought might better hold these positions. And some of them, of course, came from within the ruling coalition, but a lot of others come from outside of it. And even a name that many expected to see, for example, Azalina Othman, you know, who is part of UMNO, was still not included. So we also have, well, other people responding. And I think suffice to say that looking through the messages, a lot of what we're hearing from you is also what a lot of opposition members are saying, which is this question of old faces, similarity to the cabinet, wasted opportunities. So I think these are just some of the aspects that we want to get into.
Be that as it may, this is the cabinet we now have. So we are going to be looking at what it means in terms of governance, as well as the thing that really takes front seat right now, health. And we'd like to hear from you. What do you think of this new cabinet? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we will be speaking with Tricia Yeo from the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs on the question of governance. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
It is just coming up to 6:16. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And we're looking at the cabinet lineup that was announced earlier today. And essentially looking at it first from the perspective of what this might mean in terms of governance. We'd like to hear from you. What do you think of the cabinet? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're now joined by Tricia Yeo, CEO of IDEAS, the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs. Tricia, always good to have you with us.
Hi, Sharmila. Glad to be here again.
What were your initial thoughts on the cabinet lineup? Was it what you'd expected?
Well, I think everyone's seen by now lots of memes about it being a cabinet reshuffle as opposed to a change in the cabinet. I think the initial thoughts were that, of course, there was a removal of some people. Of course, the first and the most obvious being the former prime minister himself, so Muhyiddin Yassin not being there at all. But I did think that maintaining some of the key ministers, such as Tengku Zafrul at Minister of Finance, was good for continuity. It's a very important portfolio, and they were already involved in things like the National Recovery Plan. So I'm quite glad, actually, on some level that there is that continuity, and his team, Ed Laksana, have been doing a good job. Azmin Ali at MITI, again, it's also for continuity's sake, because I know the team there has been working on things like RCEP and CPTPP, both of which are also crucial documents for Malaysia moving forward. And I was pleasantly surprised as well seeing KJ Khairi Jamaluddin as a Minister of Health. In fact, that was something I did think of before. I didn't think it would actually happen. But he's done such a great job at the vaccination rollout that I think is just quite suitable. But there's a lot of uphill challenges for him, right? So dealing not just with the vaccinations, but I think also the contract doctors. So those are the key things. But of course, there are a lot of other, I would say, less well-performing ministers that are very much maintained in the cabinet. So there's a lot to talk about, I think, with regards to why these numbers of ministers, as well as the specific names and individuals, were maintained.
So many had hoped for a slimmer cabinet, as well as for ministers who were perceived to have underperformed to not be a part of it. From that perspective, how do you think this cabinet will be received?
I think the initial response from what I can read is that it's not as well received, simply because those who were expecting a change did not see or observe any change. The large number of ministers and deputy ministers were actually maintained. So it's essentially the same people, right? Just kind of putting them into different positions and different portfolios, perhaps. I think this was actually an opportunity for Ismail Sabri to be able to rehash and to redo things. It is an opportunity, you know, you're given the prime minister position, but yet he chose not to change things up, to get rid of some of the non-performers. The bloated cabinet, I know that many people talk about that, but the reality is that there really isn't that kind of political will right now. So what does it mean to get rid of a bloated cabinet for a slimmer cabinet? That means that you need to have a really strong leadership position, because what you're saying is that, no, we are not going to provide you these rewarded positions. And all these rewarded positions are forms in which, you know, patronage is distributed. It's a distribution of rents. And this has always been the case in Malaysian politics, right? So don't talk about government or opposition. I think all parties do that at both the federal and state levels. So in terms of the number of ministers, I wish it would have been smaller, but the reality is, unless you have a really strong leader who can sacrifice people and positions in order to cut down the public budget, that's not going to happen in the near future.
So you brought up Khairi earlier, but a number of former ministers under the previous administration have been rotated to serve different portfolios under this current one. What are your thoughts on those movements?
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting to see that, for instance, Saifuddin Abdullah is back at Foreign Affairs. So it's something that he's familiar with, and hopefully he can revive some of the initiatives that he was already trying to do back then, right, under PH. Also interesting to see that Zuraida was also switched around, perhaps given a slightly lower level, a lower portfolio level ministry. The switch around of KJ to MOH, and then therefore Adam Baba to Mosti, again, like Adam Baba's performance, I think, has been less than stellar or nothing too exciting. So given a lower profile ministry, I did hope to see some other names in the cabinet, which I think didn't emerge. So one of the widely speculated names was Azalina, because she resigned as deputy speaker, and you know, she didn't appear anywhere. Hopefully, well, let's see what happens, whether or not she will be appointed as minister. The other two people from UMNO that I think there were some speculations about were Muhammad Hassan, so Tokmat, and Khalid Nordin as well. Like these kind of a little bit more reformist types, you know, reformist as far as UMNO is concerned. And the interesting one was also to see Faizal Azumu in youth and sports, perhaps as a reward for having to relinquish his Menteri Besar position in Perak. So yeah, these are some observations, probably a little bit preliminary, but I'm going to, you know, observe and see what happens within the ministries and what they actually do.
So one of the things that I suppose is notable as well is there's still no Deputy Prime Minister this time around. Ismail Sabri has instead retained the senior minister positions, more or less unshuffled. Is this significant?
Well, again, you know, in this, back to the theme and this culture of patronage and distribution of positions, appointments and so on, it's just such an easy solution, right? Instead of appointing one deputy minister, which means that only one person will be the blue-eyed boy, like, no, instead of having one, you have four. So, I mean, of course, yeah, it goes back to the distribution. But the difference here is that this time they have included GPS as a senior minister. And I see that as the increasing significance of East Malaysian politics to the national political narrative. And they do know that they needed to reward GPS in that sense. I mean, any Sabah and Sarawak political parties providing support to the leadership today, I would imagine, is much appreciated. And I suppose this is one way of demonstrating that appreciation.
Something that I wanted to look at really is that the Prime Minister has said he's going to ensure that the new cabinet emphasizes a high performance work culture. So that's the buzzword. And that he's going to give them 100 days to prove their performance. What can we take away from this?
Yeah, I mean, it's all great sound bites, right? Like, who doesn't want a high performance work culture? I suppose if we're going to be using the same numbers of individuals, the same individuals within the same cabinet, so one would have to quantify what kind of high performance or what kind of performance at all, I suppose, from many of these ministers during their tenure thus far. And so, yeah, I suppose 100 days to prove their performance. It's all well and good. I mean, every new government will want to have a 100-day marker. But in this case, it doesn't quite feel very honest. It feels a little bit disingenuous in that sense, just because it's not really a new government. It's a new prime minister, but it's not a new government. So yes, I mean, we can take him to his word. We can look at the first 100 days and the performance. And it is right at the right time as well, because Parliament is coming into session. The next 3 months will be crucial. We need to look at the budget for 2022. We look at whether the government is going to have the political will to table finally the 12 Malaysia plan that we've all been waiting for, as well as looking at the National Recovery Plan and the vaccination plan as well. So there are things in the next 3 months that we want to look at and measure the government against. I think just making it sound like it is a new government, I suppose, is not really resonating as what a new government otherwise would normally have, I would say.
We just have about a minute left. What are those parameters? If you could give us an idea of how we can determine the efficacy of the new cabinet.
I want to see whether the government will actually make clear policy directions to announce that, okay, we are going to, for example, expand our fiscal package. Will the government actually embark on an expansionary fiscal policy? Because we know that our economy is suffering, we need to get business back on track, SMEs as well. You know, it's not as if once everyone's vaccinated, SMEs can just boom, you know, start again. Because there are costs that have already been lost over the last year and a half. So in order to get that back on track, will the government take up any plans and policies to expand the revenue base, which we have been talking about for such a long time? But it's really not the time to talk anymore, but some decisions need to be made, right? And if that is the direction of the country, what are we going to do? Are we going to introduce new forms of taxation? Do we need to start a conversation around GST? Do we need to introduce a capital gains tax? Do we need to find ways to bring some funds back from international investments into the domestic market? What are the exact plans? And of course, the NRP and vaccinations, I think that's just going to continue. And of course, we will judge based on that, right? Whether Malaysia is still going to be the highest per capita in terms of the daily new COVID cases, which we are now, not just per capita, I think in the whole number in ASEAN, in total volume, we are the highest as well. So those are the things that I would watch out for, as well as I mentioned earlier, the ability to do a proper good budget, as well as the 12 Malaysia plan, and a lot of details alongside that. They've also launched this Perkuko, which is a plan to restructure the GLIC. So I'd like to see something along the lines of GLCs more generally. We've talked a long time about this being an opportunity to restructure the economy. Do they have the ultimate political will and the gut, you know, the strong gut feeling to be able to do that?
Tricia, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
That was Tricia Yeo, CEO at Ideas, speaking to us about the unveiled cabinet from the perspective of governance. After this, we'll be honing in on health. So keep sending your thoughts our way. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Build Fairer Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:38. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we are looking at the cabinet, which was unveiled this morning, and essentially talking about how that is going to play out in terms of, well, governance earlier, and now we're going to be honing in on health. And we'd like to hear from you. What are your thoughts on the familiar faces that have been unveiled in the new cabinet? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're now joined by Dr. Koswe King, Independent Health Policy Specialist. Swe King, welcome to the show. Firstly, what are your thoughts on Khairi Jamaluddin as the newly appointed health minister?
This is generally good news. The reason being that Khairi has got some experience with health, given that he was in charge of vaccination and vaccination programs in Malaysia for the last few months. And he's done a good job. He and his team have done a good job in ramping up the vaccination program and at some point making Malaysia one of the fastest vaccinating countries in the world. So that's going to be helpful that he's got some prior experience with vaccinations. Number two, he probably has built a strong enough contact network with the Ministry of Health, as well as other agencies that are involved in the vaccination program as well. So what I mean to say is that you can't just have the experience and the expertise, you must also have necessary contact networks for us to be any successful, well, minister in any successful ministry. So this is something that I think Minister Khairi will be able to provide. Thirdly and finally, I think Minister Khairi has shown an ability to be agile in terms of his learning and the shift from one portfolio to another. So hopefully there'll be some synergies that will accelerate his progress in the first 100 days as health minister.
So you've written previously about the need for a pandemic cabinet and that non-political appointees could have the necessary expertise and qualifications. How would you assess Khairi through this lens?
Well, to find an ideal health minister, and the ideal health minister does not need to be a doctor. This much is true, and I say this happily, even though I'm a trained doctor myself. But the ideal health minister should have some expertise and experience and qualifications in health. And again, we're talking about this in ideal senses. What I might imagine is some formal training in health systems, health policies, and understanding of healthcare administration or public policy. All these things will be helpful for an ideal health minister in terms of the expertise and the experience and qualifications that are necessary. However, to become an effective minister of anything, qualifications, expertise and experience are helpful. They are, shall we say, necessary but inadequate. What other components are probably necessary as well to complete the whole picture? This will be things like political skill, political will, and an ability to get the job done by being inclusive and other characteristics of a leader, like listening to opinions and expert advice from people who are outside your fields of expertise, and being quite collaborative and collegial in the way that you're operating. Now, in all these respects, I think different people will have different opinions about all the different ministers. I think that Minister Khairi has got the requisite skill sets as well as the ability for him to be successful as a health minister. And frankly, we all want him to be successful as a health minister because his success would mean the health of all Malaysians.
So on that vein, Khairi doesn't have a medical background, unlike our last three health ministers. Has there been a difference in health policy when we've had a doctor or someone with medical knowledge in the position?
This is a great question for which I don't have a good answer because I've never done the comparative analysis. And frankly, there probably isn't a framework for us to do a comparative analysis to say that a doctor will do better or a non-doctor will do better as a health minister because there are so many variables like the prevailing politics of the day, national development status. Nobody expected COVID and game changers or black swan events like COVID that could really complicate any comparison between a doctor as a health minister or a non-doctor as a health minister. But I'll say a few things other than that, right? Firstly, is to say that it might actually be helpful for being a doctor is great. And like I mentioned, I love doctors and I'm one myself. But being a doctor, especially if you spend your entire life in clinical practice, in, for example, surgery or in a specific clinical speciality, it might make you unable to see the truly big picture. Because public health, public policy, health policy, public administration and healthcare management are all completely different fields. So it's not so much whether or not you're a doctor or a non-doctor, but it's more about the ability for you to see the big picture and to have a very complete skill set. This is not to say a doctor is better or a non-doctor is better, but all things being equal, is a complete skill set that we're looking for. And finally, I might say that this pandemic has literally shown us that health cannot belong only to the Ministry of Health. In other words, the Ministry of Health in Malaysia today is actually the Ministry of Health Care, that they're only delivering care in hospitals and clinics. But health requires the collaboration between the ministries of health, the public service division, because we need to have solutions for doctors, Ministry of Human Resources, because we need good policies for labor rights, Ministry of International Trade and Industry, because we need strong SOPs and for factories to reopen, Ministry of Consumer Affairs, because we need to have some amount of price control or price moderation in the private hospital markets in Malaysia, etc., etc. So the point being that Ministry of Health alone cannot be responsible for healthcare, and any Minister of Health should know that healthcare alone is inadequate to guarantee health for all of Malaysia.
Of course, Khairi served as Coordinating Minister of the National Immunisation Programme, and that since early February. Talk to us about his performance there and how that will help prepare him for this new role.
To answer the question of grading someone's performance, we must always consider that there are things that are within control and outside of control. There are things that are outside of control of any vaccination minister in any country, anywhere in the world. And there will be things like vaccine supply, variants creating the need for possible new vaccines, the amount of money that is given over to you for you to purchase vaccines in the first instance. These are things that are outside of Minister Khairi's control. But the things that are within his control in terms of, say, public-private partnerships, the speed of vaccination, the effectiveness of vaccinations, public communications, and the reasonable amounts of transparency, I think he's done reasonably well. Like I've mentioned earlier in the interview, a lot of these lessons, experiences, knowledge, networks, and momentum can be carried forward to the health ministry. However, a word of, advice or caution to any new health minister is that the COVID vaccination program probably forms a minority of the overall pandemic response. Let me invent a number. 20, 30, 40% of the pandemic response is reliant on vaccines and vaccination programs. The remaining 60, 70, 80% of our pandemic response must rely on things like social distancing, appropriate SOPs, enforcement, what is our testing strategy, tracing strategy, healthcare strategies, surge capacity, what do we do with the Greater Klang Valley Task Force after the Klang Valley situation is stabilized, etc. So the point I'm making is vaccinations is a small part of the overall pandemic management strategy. And in turn, the pandemic management strategy is a small part of health for Malaysia. And that health for Malaysia strategy is in turn a very small part of Malaysia's national development strategy. So when you look at the super big picture at 30,000 feet, we probably realize that vaccinations are very important. However, it becomes a pretty small part in the grand scheme of things.
So overall, how do you see this guiding our health policies over the next year or so?
We have a cabinet that will probably last until the next general election. This will be about 18, 20 months from now. One hopes that this is the last cap administration between now and the next general election that must be held before May 2023. Therefore, the first hope that we want for health policies is a stable set of health policies that are predictable and will provide the business community in Malaysia and the population of Malaysia a brief respite, shall we say, before we go for the next general election. So how does this affect health policies? Firstly, we hope for stable health policies. Number two, the immediate priority is really to manage the COVID pandemic well. Number three, at the same time, to provide enough solutions for a safe general elections, meaning any new health minister must also work with the Elections Commission in order to ensure that we can have elections in May 2023 that are safe, as perhaps remotely, remote voting, electronic voting, or these things. I'm not an expert in elections during COVID, but there are many lessons that we can draw from different countries. These are some priorities that are on the table for the next health minister, and we hope that the health policies will be crafted in this particular way.
And if we focus in a little bit more, how might this impact the approach to pandemic efforts?
It remains to be seen. I guess it's a short answer. It's difficult to answer this question. because we're this question essentially asks us to predict, right, what will happen. So several scenarios could happen. The first scenario is we will be able to have a strong pandemic response with an inclusive effort, meaning people from outside the Ministry of Health will finally be allowed an active, structural and systematic way to collaborate into the effort. So this is one way that it could happen. The second way that it could happen, it could be a little bit more of a business as usual, meaning the pandemic strategies that Malaysia has adopted over the last year and a half are not working. If they're working, we wouldn't have 20,000 cases a day. So if the pandemic strategies are not working and we continue with this strategy as a second scenario, that would be not ideal for Malaysia. And there are many points in between as well, between a successful ideal where we change policies, become more inclusive, have a strong and powerful and robust response, or we regress to following business as usual and have a continuing poor response.
So the PM has said that these ministers will need to perform in the next 100 days. And on our station, you've also previously said that the health minister will need to be competent and effective. How would you like to see this competence and effectiveness displayed over the next 3 months?
Well, we may not have 3 months because we've got 20,000 cases a day and we're talking about a significant portion of other Malaysian states at risk of having a surge similar to Sabah last year and Kuala Lumpur and rather Greater Klang Valley this year. So the any new minister might not have the luxury of 3 full months. So let's scale it down perhaps a little bit to 1 month. What do I hope to see in terms of competence and effectiveness in the next 1 month? Perhaps a few things. Number one, a clear effort, not just rhetoric, but also say practical means to include experts from outside the Ministry of Health into the decision-making and implementation processes. So it's not just enough that they're advising, but they must also be involved in helping to make decisions and to implement those decisions. To repeat, not just advisory, but decision-making and implementation. And this can be done by many experts inside universities, in civil societies, and in think tanks that are all ready and willing to help, but have been a little excluded until today. So this is the first measure of competence and effectiveness, especially inclusive leadership as well. Number two, there should be some measures towards a coherent long-term strategy. What I mean to say is Malaysia today has got a collection of strategies. We have a vaccination strategy, we have a testing strategy, we have a recovery strategy, but none of these strategies talk to each other. So as a measure of competence and effectiveness in the first, say, month or so, will be meaningful moves towards developing a national strategy that's coherent and lets the other, shall we say, individual groups of strategies and individual categories and buckets to talk to each other. And this could be the creation of some sort of APEX, a Ministry of Health council with decision making, or some form of council that's outside the Ministry of Health. So that's another measure of a competence and effectiveness, but to get everything together and talk to each other. Thirdly and finally, I think in the next 1 month or so, it's difficult to see a reduction in the daily number of cases. So metrics like daily number of cases or even case counts and so on and so forth will probably need a bit of a washout period of 4, maybe even 6 to 8 weeks. What I mean to say is let's not hope for a magic reversal in our fortunes, because the pandemic right now in Malaysia has got significant community transmission. We probably can't keep everything, under control in the space of 1 to 2 weeks. We must allow a bit of breathing room. But in terms of competent and effective, responses by the health minister, it should be measured by numbers. Numbers such as daily case numbers, share of positive tests, total number of tests, and so on and so forth, including making the data very transparent. That will be a third and final measure for competence and effectiveness.
Speaking in closing, is there anything you'd like to leave us with?
Health is more than just science and evidence and, clinical trials. Health is more than just facts. It requires facts and evidence and science and clinical trials. But health also requires political choices to be made. And if the country makes good political choices, we will have good health. So there are three components I'd like to leave us with. In short, health is science and evidence and facts. Number two, health is also good political choices. Finally, health is good public administration, meaning if the new health minister is able to administer a 270,000 health ministry effectively and to deliver good and coordinated public services, we will achieve good health. So to leave us all, health is evidence and science and facts. Health is also good political choices. And finally, health is the boring, daily, steady and routine good public administration.
Swee King, thanks for speaking with us today. That was Dr. Koh Swee King, Independent Health Policy Specialist, weighing in on the appointment of Khairi Jamaluddin as Health Minister, and in a larger sense, what we need when it comes to health policies here in managing the pandemic. Do share your thoughts with us. We are, of course, talking about the cabinet lineup that was unveiled today. What are your thoughts on it? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We've got so many messages already. We'll look at them after this. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Business, finance, and music. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:55. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And we've been talking about the new cabinet and asking you for your thoughts. Keep sending them our way. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We've got so many messages. Let's start with a few.
So let's see. We have this from V, who says, this mostly switch raises concerns for the great vaccination progress that Khairi achieved before. And I think this is interesting because I'm sure that this is a concern that many are having. But I do think that there needs to be a distinction between mostly and coordinating minister, because a lot of the work that I think we identify as Khairi Jamaluddin's work over the last 6 months or so, ever since he took on the role of coordinating minister, is of the vaccination. But that's associated with that role. And that role, as of now, hasn't been filled or assigned yet. So it wasn't necessarily in his capacity as mostly, in case that helps.
And perhaps some might argue that the streamlining of this to make the health minister the one who has already been managing the vaccination rollout might in fact ease some of the issues with coordinating between departments, ministries, and so on. Speaking of specific ministries, we do have Munif, who says, despite producing two clusters in Selangor, my workplace kept getting meaty approval during MCO for some reason. So naturally, we now have a COVID death plus 20 new cases, hundreds of close contacts as well. Now the individual responsible for this farce is reinstated in his position like nothing ever happened. And suddenly this cabinet will be high performing. How can things change when literally nothing has changed? This is the state Malaysia is in right now.
Munif, I'm sorry to hear about your workplace in the first... Just hearing about that is incredibly stressful. But and extending that, I think that this idea of how can things change when literally nothing has changed is more or less the tone of a lot of the messages, because there is a deep concern about how it is that we're suddenly going to be high performing. And it's one that I started the show with because I also don't necessarily see it. I'm not sure whether we whether there's going to be external consultants, for example. I'm not sure whether there's going to be a concerted plan. And I think until we see what that report card is going to look like, or what the KPIs as determined by the Prime Minister are going to be for that 100 days, it's hard to know. But one wishes for high performing. Everybody wants that. How we define that, that's the important thing.
We're getting many variations of this same papata, so I'm just going to read this. Gary says, same pot of bubo chacha with the same ubi inside, just the pot is new. And, you know, we've been hearing multiple versions of that same sentiment being expressed. If you want to be optimistic, I think it's worth saying that they've literally been unveiled today, and this question of the 100 days and the performance, perhaps that's something to keep an eye on.
The pot isn't even new, is it? It's kind of borrowed. It's a borrowed pot.
Yes.
Yes. But optimism. Yes. Sorry.
I know. It's like, yes. Let's be optimistic about this pot that we now have. Keep those thoughts coming. What do you think about the lineup that was unveiled today? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, and we'll be looking at your messages a little later on. So keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.